I'm Billy. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. Thanks everyone for being here. I will focus a little bit on concept nine and all levels of leadership. I thank everyone for their service here. Most important thing to know is I'm a past GSR of the West Side Young People's Group in New York City. I also happen to have held some other service positions along the way, including being a past delegate and a past trustee and member of the Trustees Corrections Committee and lots of things in between. I would like to say that obviously I'm sharing my experience, but I am an imperfect person, which means that I have opinions. So obviously they could seep through. I will try to make sure that they're based on my actual experience, but if you have a different opinion, I'm completely okay with that. I would tell you from like 100,000 feet, you know, I'm in the middle of writing something for somebody, and I am helping the Iran General Service Board. I meet with them once a week, and they're in the middle of expanding their structure. You know, it was like they had groups, then all of a sudden they had a conference, they got nothing else. They need to build out districts and things. And, you know, when I look back at my history in AA, especially in service, like a lot of people in service today, the people that they look up to are not the same people that I looked up to. You know, I was a delegate during the non-digital age, even though I am still younger than the average delegate to the General Service Conference today. Which I could go on that tangent forever about how we have not been a healthy structure by only letting older people serve. That has not helped us. I'm not anti-older people. We just, but I was there at the end of the 90s, in the middle of the 90s, and I served at the bottom of the triangle from, you know, 99 until 2017. So the greatest thing that I have noticed over that time, and I will weave that into talking about concept nine and all levels of service, is that if you divide AA service into like the two most basic elements, it's our message and then carrying our message. Those are the two most basic elements of what we do here. Now, if you look back at the last 20 something years, you will notice a trend, and that trend is we've started to want to tinker, maybe that's even too light a word, with the message. But yet, when it comes to carrying the message, we're like so set in our ways of how we do things, which to me, I don't know, I just feel it should be opposite. Like, the message has worked for a long time, and it's worked perfectly for real alcoholics. I wish we would focus more on changing. And you know, if you're a student of our literature, you know that both in AA Comes of Age and the 12 and 12, it talks about Rule 62. It talks about not taking ourselves too seriously. At the board, we sometimes talked about Rule 63, which may do more to destroy AA than anything else, which is, this is the way we've always done it. This is the way we've always done it is an idea killer in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're almost like the mixed message champions or black belt at mixed messages. We have events like this, or we visit groups, or we are at a convention or a conference and we tell people, we need you in service, we need you in treatment service, we need you in correction service, we need you in public information of CPC, we need GSRs, we need you at intergroup, we need people doing service. But then when you show up, if you bring a new idea, we want to run you out the door. Like, we just wanted somebody to do it exactly the way I did it. Like, it's kind of been our MO for a long time. And no healthy organization, inside or outside of AA, can stay vibrant without change. Unfortunately, we've decided probably to change the wrong thing. We've started to change the message instead of having to carry it. Concept nine, if you're not familiar with it, might be Bill W's arguably greatest writings in service. I'll just read the concept. It says, good service leaders, together with sound and appropriate methods of choosing them, are at all levels indispensable for our future functioning and safety. The primary world service leadership once exercised by the founders of AA must necessarily be assumed by the trustees of the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, in the first paragraph, it talks a lot about structure, you know, and it says, the operating results of our structure can be no better than the personal performance of those who must man it and make it work, which is something that goes against a lot of AA nonsense that you hear at all levels. You hear it at groups, you hear it at districts, you hear it at areas, you hear it at the Board of Trustees, because I want to read that again. The operating results of our structure can be no better than the personal, an AA, singular, performance of those who must man it and make it work. Because we hear in AA all the time, well, don't worry about who takes the job. Don't worry about who you vote for. It'll all work out. God has a big plan. That's not what it says here. And, you know, when we elect people, and I'll just start by talking about electing at your GSR. You know, sometimes I get in a lot of conversations with people, especially, did this district receive its copies of the final conference report? Okay. Has anybody here by chance given it a look for this year, by any chance? Okay. Has anybody by chance read the advisory actions that came out of this year's conference? Okay. So the advisory actions are basically commands to the trustees that this is what the General Service Conference has decided on a particular issue. And if two-thirds of the conference votes that way, that's what we do. But people get all upset a lot when the conference decides to do things. The last couple of years have been a legendary couple of years in Alcoholics Anonymous regarding the conference. We could start with the preamble. I still go to meetings where people are still arguing, not only about the new preamble, but about the way it was changed, about the vote, about the conference, about them not knowing. Then we have the plain language big book that is going forward. And this year the delegates looked at a draft of that, and next year they'll look at another draft. And there's all kinds of issues. Those are just two easy ones to pick on, because while maybe 50 or 60%, I would tell you, of the advisory actions each year, only diehard people in service really dig down into those details. But there's always a few actions every year that gets the attention of the fellowship. Now, it didn't have their attention before the conference, unfortunately. It has their attention now that a decision has been made. And when people argue about who are these people voting, you know, how'd they get there? Well, they got there because of you. And they got there particularly because of two things. One of the things you did and one of the things you didn't do. That's the way people get there. Either they were elected and your group has a GSR who goes to the district and goes to an assembly and took part in electing a delegate, or your group abdicated responsibilities. But one of the most important roles of a GSR is they're the largest voting group for that delegate. Now, here's where I'm going to say that I know Area 15 officers hate when I say this, and it's, we can just agree to disagree. There is not a line of succession in Alcoholics Anonymous service. I know we like to think there is, but just because you held one position does not guarantee that you deserve the next position. If you're a bad alternate cookie person at your meeting, you're not going to be a good cookie person. It's not going to miraculously change overnight, you know? If you're a bad alternate GSR. And you know, this whole GSR thing, you know, when we talk about levels of service, I just want to make sure that I. There are two major obstacles of getting GSRs to an assembly. The number one obstacle is to their first assembly. What? The number one obstacle is getting a GSR that was just elected to their first assembly. Is how many groups feel comfortable that they just know they elected a GSR? Like, I went to my December business meeting, 2 years went by, it's time to elect a new GSR. I'm just happy we elected a new GSR. But not invested in whether that GSR actually went to the next quarterly. And if your group doesn't allow your GSR to give a report, and I'm not saying how it should be or where it should be. It could be during the beginning of the meeting, end of the meeting, business meeting. That's not for me to decide. But if your group is not getting regular reports from the GSR, how would you even know whether the GSR went? So that's something that the group can really control. It's really in the group's hands. Of getting a GSR that's elected to their first quarterly. The next one is a bigger obstacle. And that's getting a GSR to go to their second assembly after going to their first. Is if we're asking somebody, you know, sometimes we're so condescending in our message, like, oh, yeah, you should be here and you just have to give back because you're lucky to be sober and lucky AA is here and just shut your mouth and sit in the corner. And this is how we've always done it. That is not how to engage people or to empower people. It's just not in any organization. So if we make somebody and not make, they got voted GSR, but let's just say they decide to go for the whole weekend. Show up on Friday night or all day Saturday. They go to the banquet on Saturday night. They go to the business meeting on Sunday. If they feel like it's a complete waste of time, they are not going back. If they feel like leadership has no respect for the masses who are attending these quarterlies, they might not want to return. If they feel like their input really wasn't wanted, or probably the one of the biggest offenders of keeping people from getting to their second assembly is, I mean, just think about a new GSR who maybe opens their mouth for the first time at a quarterly. It could be at the GSR sharing session. It could be at the morning AA meeting they have. It could be at the business meeting at the microphone. It could be a lot of those things. Is the people that were there already, the immense responsibility they have to encourage people to come back, the immense responsibility they have to let people be their own conscience. Sometimes the way we treat people at these service gatherings, whether it's a district meeting or a quarterly meeting, it's like, God forbid somebody says the wrong thing or says it at the wrong time. Or goes against the grain with a different thought, we, you know, it can be as simple as a roll of the eyes. It can be people whispering in the back of the room after you said something. There's all these things that we can do. And, you know, I've probably been, I don't know how many regional forums I've been at, but whether it's district workshops, regional forums, area assemblies, the amount where there has been a Q&A is way over 100 over the last 25 years or so. the question that always appears. It doesn't matter where you are. I've been in New York City and it appears. I've been in North Dakota and it appears. I've been in California. I've been in Russia. I've been in Ireland. I just was in Poland this weekend. It appears everywhere. And that question is always, how do we get more people to do service? Or how do we deal with this apathy? And after probably answering that question wrong the majority of the time, which I will freely admit, it took me a long time to really wrap my head around that question and really compare it. I'm not a person who's afraid to talk about the big book in a service meeting. And, our big book, there is a major portion. The book says, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. Some would argue that could be changed to, rarely have we seen a person fail who's done steps 4 through 9. Like, we know the importance in the big book, the section on the third step. There's one word there that seems to be very confusing to people like me, which is next. It says next. It says next, we launch a course of vigorous house cleaning. If we don't do it, our decision has little permanent effect. That's what it says. It seems next is not in the alcoholic vocabulary. If it is, we put another word at the end of it, like next year, next season, next after bowling's over, whatever. But the point of what I'm saying is, it would be hard to argue that personal inventory is not an important part of the 12 steps. I'm not here to argue what's the most important part, but I think we could all agree that the personal inventory is an important part. How you do it with your sponsor or what else, it's not for me to go into. But that inventory, one of the things it makes clear, even though some people don't like it, is it's not an inventory of other people. It's your inventory, my inventory. Yes, I get a section where I can list who I'm resentful at and deal with that through the inventory process. But we focus on our side of the street. Like, we can't change the rest of the world, but we can change it ourselves, even if it's, in my experience, slowly, a little at a time. So that's why that question of, why do these people not want to do service? Why do they not show up? Why do they not volunteer? Why are they stealing from AA? They got sober and they're not giving back. And one of the things that I've started to do when I get that question is, I say, we can't take other people's inventory. We can only control those of us that are here, whether it's at a district or an intergroup or an area. And maybe we should be asking ourselves some harder questions at the district area level, which is, what are we doing that makes people not want to be part of this? Like, what things are we doing that maybe drives people away instead of maybe invites them and wants them to participate? And then, there's a lot of things you hear at AA meetings when you've been here a while and you've heard them over and over and over again. Recently I heard somebody say, and it so applies to AA service, but they were saying that in their personal life, you hear the insanity, the definition of insanity that we're all raised with, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. But this person had a much different spin, which I am stealing for sure, because it's my story, drinking for sure, which is, my definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, and I knew what was going to happen. Like, I was not expecting any different results when I drink. Like, I knew exactly what was going to happen. It's not a surprise what happens when I'm drinking. There's nothing surprising about it at all. Same thing with AA service. if we keep doing the same things, even things that don't work. You know, I tell people all the time, I don't care if it's your district meeting, your intergroup committee or steering committee meeting, your area assembly. I don't know where all of you work. I know where I work. But I know that I've worked in a couple of different places and organizations over the years, and I know that I've been part of other non-work organizations. And if you were to go back 20 years to 2020 to 2003, specifically September of 2003, like, are you doing things the same way today that you did them back then? And I'm not talking about the message in the big book, which I've already made clear. I wanted to change it for 9 years. Once I got that out of my system, life has been much better to just leave it alone. But in AA service, you know, we pass things on and pass things on. It's why, like, although I have service sponsees, I don't like the real term service sponsee because I don't like to tell people that if they're going to be have a successful AA service journey, they have to do it exactly the way I did it. Or it should look exactly the way I did it, or do things exactly the way I did it. Like, we actually need new, brave, and bold ideas of how to do things. Like, I can tell you for a lot of assemblies that I've been to, there's basically maybe three different types of assemblies across the 93 areas. If you didn't know, there's 93 different areas. I want to say 17 are in Canada. The rest are in the United States. They're divided up into eight regions. But you know, amongst those 93 areas, there's different ways of doing business. There's areas that have one-day assemblies. They tend to be smaller in geography, where it's easy to drive to and drive back in the same day. They don't have overnights and things like that. And then there are assemblies that are 2 days, start Saturday morning, end on Sunday, and then there are assemblies that are Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Regardless of which type of assembly, you know, people go to, what I see is that the schedule and the agenda is exactly the same as it was 20 years ago. Exactly the same. Like, okay, you just got elected. You're going to take a book off a shelf and it's going to tell you that on Friday night, we're going to open the registration table at this time. And on Friday night, we're going to do this. And on Saturday morning, we're going to do this. And on Saturday afternoon, we're going to do this. And on Sunday morning, we're going to do this. And that might have all worked well 20 years ago. But it's hard to think that a living, breathing organization, which Alcoholics Anonymous is, can survive without tweaking the way we carry the message every once in a while. And we all know that the world changes too, and AA has to keep up with that. The membership of AA is not the same today as it was in 1951. It's not the same today as it was in 1970. It's not the same today as it was in the year 2000. The world has changed. I mean, if I looked at, like, I went to my first AA meeting in 1980. I was 14 years old. I didn't get sober until 9 years after that, in and out. But in 1980, think about the United States of America in 1980. And think about the average person in AA, meaning average trusted servant. How many of those people were one income houses with a spouse that stayed home and took care of the children? What percentage of them was that at that time compared to 2023? I would tell you, night and day different. I would tell you, when I came into AA, it was all my parents' friends who were in the meetings. Or my parents' friends' grandparents who were in the meetings. That's who was there, right? And when you look at 1980 or 1970, like, we got to admit that AA service is basically built around people who work days Monday to Friday. You can't argue with that, especially in person, without any hybrid event at all. Is it was built around people who go to work Monday to Friday and have Saturday and Sundays off. If you don't have that, well, maybe then we need to find another service for you to do. You know, if you're off Tuesdays and Wednesdays, you know, maybe you can bring a meeting into the jails. But all I'm saying is the world changes. And for us to like be locked down and not wanting to change, it doesn't help us. If you're going to do AA service, you know, Bill's leadership essay, it's probably the best definition of principles before personalities ever written. And it's not all good news. I mean, I read this one line. I'm going to put a little quotes around it, even though I have it in yellow, but good service leadership never passes the buck. You know how many times I have been in an AA service meeting where something has gone really bad? By really bad, I mean money was stolen. By really mad, I mean the budget was not even close to kept to. By really bad, I mean the person who was supposed to get the hotel for the weekend assembly got the worst contract in the history of contracts. I could go on and on of really bad. How many times I've been in one of those meetings where people say, "Oh, you know what? We're doing God's work. It was supposed to happen." Like they twist the words. I came into AA during the third edition of the Big Book when the acceptance paragraph was on page 449. You know, but everybody buys into this thing that we have to accept, you know, nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Well, that doesn't mean everything that happens, God wants to happen. It means nothing happens by mistake, meaning even if you're an idiot, it's not a mistake that it was the worst contract in the history. You know, if you're not trustworthy, it's not a mistake in God's world that you stole all the money. Like nothing happens in God's world by mistake, but that doesn't mean God wanted it to be bad. We love to pass the blame. We love to say, "Oh, this is spiritual. We can't talk about somebody did something wrong." Or I'm not saying to personally punish people. There's nothing wrong with taking, again, I go back to the inventory of good stock in trade and say, what is working that we are doing and what is not working? It says at the beginning of the leadership essay, we are apt to warp the traditional idea of principles before personalities around to such point that there would be no personality in leadership, whatever. This would imply rather faceless, autonomous automations trying to please everybody. Well, I don't know about you, but I can tell you, when we talk about character defects, and if I'm looking at some of my own, like people pleasing seems to run deep in the DNA of alcoholics sometimes. My experience is, not as much when we're drinking. Like, we seem to be the exact opposite, actually. We seem to never be worried about pleasing anybody. And I don't know why it is. I don't know if it's a sense of guilt of how many people we've ran over or lives we've destroyed or just, you know, first communions we've wrecked, Christmases we've wrecked, Thanksgivings we've destroyed. But we have this overwhelming need to like want to please. And, you know, he talks about here that principles before personalities does not mean that service should be personality-less. And I talk about that because One of the first things that Bill W. talks about on page 27 of the concepts is talking about leadership. Like, if you're not electing the right GSRs, everything fails after that. I mean, he says, when making their choices of GSRs, the AA groups themselves should have such facts well in mind. And I can tell you, if people ask me the difference between GSRs today and GSRs of the mid-90s, when I first got involved in AA service, you did not see a lot of GSRs who were like the youngest person sober in the group. You saw like die-hard, active members who were invested in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the group wanted the best person there. And somewhere along the line, and maybe because we didn't make service attractive, GSR almost became like a punishment to get elected to. And I would tell you that it should not be a punishment. And it goes on to say, as the GSRs meet in their assemblies to name delegates, an even greater degree of care and dedication will be required. Personal ambitions will have to be set aside, feuds and controversy forgotten. Who are the best qualified people that we can name? This should be the thought of all. And I never realized how important that line was of personal ambitions cast aside, feuds and controversy forgotten. Like, what does that really mean? Well, today I realize I know what Bill was trying to get across, meaning the person that I don't like the most in the room might very well be the best delegate. The person who I agree with nothing about nothing might very well do the best job. Like, we shouldn't trying to be elect people who just agree with us, because the truth is, all of my friends are not diehard General Service people. Yes, I have a long list of friends that are, but I have many friends that are not long, lifelong AA friends. Even though I like them a lot, they would not be a good person to elect as a GSR. I know that in my head today. They're a good person to play poker with on Friday night with seven other guys in AA, but they would not be a good person to show up and take the commitment seriously. And we have this thing where I don't know where it comes from either. What this is saying, because it's become, we say in AA a lot, don't take other people's inventory. This is telling you the exact opposite. This is telling you have to take other people's inventory. This is the time for you to do the right thing for AA, not for yourself. Who are the best qualified people that we can name? It used to be very common. I tell people this all the time. If you don't think I'm correct, you're not going to find anybody my age, very few, that could answer the question, my chronologic age. You're going to have to find somebody in their 70s or 80s who was a delegate or a trustee in the 70s or 80s and ask them, like, what was the biggest difference in AA service then? And what they would tell you is, number one, the districts were the most active focal point of Alcoholics Anonymous, not the areas. The area was basically a gathering where districts told the area how to operate and what to do. There was no central command. Maybe it's that, sometimes I think TV and other things affect, I work around construction insurance and, on large construction projects, and 30 years ago, if someone got hurt, I never had to worry about taking too many pictures. Now, because there's a CSI in every city in the country, it appears on TV 24 hours a day, everyone has become a CSI crime scene photographer. And so now, if there's an accident on a construction site, there's like hundreds of pictures that we don't need, some of them that should have never been taken. And sometimes I think, like, obviously this has been a, the reason that we are rewriting a lot of the literature for veterans. Maybe you probably don't know this. If you're a veteran, maybe you do. But most of our literature geared around the military and going into and veterans, active military personnel and veterans, most of that literature was geared towards peacetime military and veterans. Meaning most of the stories and most of the information was end of Vietnam until like 9/11. It took a while for AA to realize that we have more, well, the VAs have never been more crowded, ever. We have more combat wounded than ever. Also, the big difference between veterans and military of today going back in the past is if you go back to large conflicts, Vietnam, Korea, World War II, World War I, the average veteran did one tour overseas. Not the case with our veterans since 9/11. We are seeing people who did two, three, four tours. And that has had an immense effect on the amount of veterans who have alcohol problems and have shown up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's caused us to have to like look at our literature and like say, hey, we need to change some of that. Like the veterans who are reading this now don't identify with the stories that are in the pamphlet. Like we have to make it more towards the veterans of today. But we should always be thinking like that about the whole world, not just veterans, not just the military. But these feuds and controversy that we have with other people, and like I said, the world changes, but the district was the boots on the ground. And it was very common. Now, a lot of areas have different structures. Area 15 has a district chair for each county, and then multiple DCMs and sub-districts. That's a very common, probably in half of the areas in the country. Very common. Sometimes they don't call it a district chair, they call it a DCM at large. Other areas, each district is its own municipality, its own principality. It has like a moat and a drawbridge drawn around it, and they get to do whatever they want in their little piece of the kingdom. And they don't have like a district chair or a DCM. But I can tell you that in the 80s and the 70s and even the 60s, it was very common for a district chair or DCM at large to get elected as alternate delegate or delegate. At that time, a lot of area chair positions didn't even exist, or alternate delegate position didn't exist. The area chair and alternate delegate were the same position. But now we have like this, we have like a career path. I hate that word in AA service. Like, okay, you're a GSR now. You'll become a DCM or an ADCM and then a DCM. And then you'll become an alternate district chair or district chair. And then maybe you'll become a member of the area finance committee or corrections committee or archives committee. And then maybe we used to have like an area used to have four people, a delegate, an alternate delegate, an area chair, maybe a secretary. a treasurer. Today, not only do we have all those positions, but everybody has an alternate. And we have registrars and corresponding secretaries and recording secretaries. And all I'm saying is, was it meant that you had to be 20 years, 2 years at a time before you stood to be an area chair or an area delegate or an alternate delegate? I can tell you right now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be an alternate delegate before you were a delegate, but it's not a rule. One of the best people who I served with as a delegate when I was either a non-trustee delegate, director or a trustee was somebody I knew from Young People's AA who came from this area, came from Area 15. He was very involved with IKIPA and everything. He lived down in Palm Beach Gardens. He then went on to go to law school and moved to Texas to go to law school. He practices law today. His name is Tom M. But Tom went right from area chair to area delegate. He was never an alternate delegate. For whatever reason, his area felt that he was the best person to step up. All I'm trying to say is we should elect the best qualified people. What we don't have in AA is lifetime achievement. Those are for the Grammys and the Emmys and the Academy Awards. Sometimes it's someone that got a lot of awards, right? But you ever, like, if you do enough research into the Grammys and the Oscars and the Emmys, sometimes there's a year when someone can't believe who won. And if you do a little research and you do a little reading as to what was going on that year, you'll always come up with the following phrase. Like, here it is. We know that somebody who is like so on top of it all, acting, who gave an amazing performance, didn't win this year. And somebody who's great, but did not have a great performance, got it that year. And when you read what the experts or the critics say, they say, they decided it was their time. They deserved it. They had put enough time in. They had held all these positions. I don't think we have that kind of luxury in Alcoholics Anonymous when we're dealing with carrying a message and people who are dying of alcoholism. Like, we should be electing the best people. That's it. Maybe they were the alternate, maybe they weren't. I'm not telling people to show up and say, you know what? Yeah, I'd like to be GSR, but I think I really would be a good delegate. Because those kind of people with those kind of egos show up in Alcoholics Anonymous. We know that. You know, I really think I would be a good area chair. I've never been a district chair or I've never done this, but I think I would be a good area chair, right? Which brings you to electing alternates. Like, I was only an alternate delegate for 45 days, from January the 1st of 1999 to like February the 15th. I lived in Chicago for work. I went to the, what they call the delegates, past delegates gathering of the East Central region of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went there that weekend as an alternate delegate. I came back and I was a delegate. Delegate died on the way home, had a massive heart attack. And that weekend made me think a little bit, and I've always stuck up for alternates because I wasn't allowed to go to certain things the delegate went to that weekend. Like, they had a meeting with the regional trustee to give, like, first year delegates the lay of the land of the New York conference and what goes on there and what to expect. But because I was only an alternate, now that rule has changed. I made that motion like 3 years after I was a delegate. Like, we need to make sure that whoever we elect, we know is going to be good enough to step in right away. Like, I know this goes against a lot of popular misinformation, but when you elect a delegate, an alternate delegate, or an alternate district chair or an alternate anything. The primary purpose you are not electing them is to get 2 years training to get that position. That's a benefit of them being an alternate and a good one. And we've had many people who've served in great positions who got 2 years experience as an alternate, but that is not the number one reason you are electing them. You are electing somebody who at a moment's notice can step in and do the job. That's, you know, what we're doing here. Now, the last thing I just want to talk before we break. There's some stuff in here in Bill's leadership essay that I've really had to grow and to take to heart. It says, then too, a leader must realize that even very prideful or angry people can sometimes be dead right. I don't want to know that. When the calm and more humble are quite mistaken. And we've taken this and we've blown this up in AA. I want to read it again. Realize that even very prideful or angry people can sometimes be dead right when the calm and more humble are sometimes quite mistaken. We've also done this other thing in Alcoholics Anonymous service. We've crucified and criminalized people who ask questions. Like that somehow makes you a troublemaker. If you ask a question or a hard question, you're a troublemaker. It was never supposed to be that way. Bill wrote it like that. The calm and more humble are often quite mistaken. He goes on to say another qualification for leadership is give and take. The ability to compromise cheerfully whenever a proper compromise can cause a situation of progress in what appears to be the right direction. Compromise comes hard to us all or nothing drunks. And then it goes on to really the welcome to AA service, often called upon to face heavy and long continued criticism. Yeah, that's what happens. Most of the time by people who didn't even volunteer to stand for the job. You know? Or how about the person that stands for another job but wants to criticize you for doing your job instead of being focused on their job? And then it goes on to say, there are always our constructive critics, our friends indeed. We ought never, not sometimes, never fail to give them a careful hearing. We should be willing to let them modify our opinion or change them completely. Often, too, we shall have to disagree and stand fast without losing their friendship. Then there are those, too, we like to call our destructive critics. They power drive. They're politickers. They make accusations. Maybe they're violent, malicious. They pitch gobs of rumor, gossip, and general scuttlebutt to gain their ends. I'll close by giving you a great rule that someone in AA service gave me a long time ago. And it's 100% of the time works. If someone in AA service is talking bad to you or talking bad about someone else in AA service, I can guarantee you they are talking bad about you. It is 100% true. Those people are toxic and need to go. If they are whispering in your ear, just they're more focused on talking bad about other people than doing their job. I'm telling you that when you're not there and someone else is sitting next to them, they're talking about you. And, you know, we need good leaders in AA and we need change, obviously. Let's admit it. If I was doing a service workshop on Zoom in 2019, yeah, the emails or posts about how my ego is completely out of control and I've lost my mind, now I'm doing workshops on TV, I mean, it would just be relentless, relentless. Like, we've been able to harness this technology. And I'm not saying I love in-person AA, but there's certain things we can do. You know, I went to an assembly in California, in Northern California. I was there for I was there actually for an Al-Anon event where they had an AA speaker. But I knew that the local assembly was going on like 30 minutes from where I was that weekend. And it was the one right after the conference, so I knew the delegate was giving the delegate report. And I also know some people from that region that I've served with as trustees, and I went. And when I walked in, I couldn't believe my eyes. Right at the table when I walked in was a sign with a QR code. And I just took a picture of it, and I registered for that assembly as a guest in 30 seconds, right there. No noise in the back of the room, no conversation, just bam, registered. And then I got talking to their registrar later on about what they've been able to do to improve registration for assemblies. And I'm like, wow, like, people are going to steal your idea, but good for you. You were able to like get people to change a little bit. Even when I was at the last quarterly here, I noticed that there were certain signs on the tables with QR codes where people could bring up documents, and that's amazing. That's awesome. I mean, I can't wait. I can't wait until there's a QR code on our literature. Sooner or later, we will get to there. My message is simple. Like, the message is good, our AA recovery message. But let's elect the right people. Let's elect the best people for the job. And let's find new ways that we can do this better, that work in 2023. And really take to heart to try and not be afraid to have the person who follows you in service to do a better job than you. Instead of like waiting for them to mess up and calling them out on it, right? Why not just be their cheerleader and hope that maybe they'll do things better?